because I've worked in many companies, what I'm always surprised is in any digital product, including machine learning, people think that after it goes live, it will just live by its own. And then think about operations and implementation early on, even in the POC phase. That's so important.
Say it again. Please say it again.
Yeah, exactly.
And to add on this, also many mistakes.
You've tuned in to Data Klubben, a podcast about data, analytics, digital transformation, and the most important ingredient for success, people. She's head of AI and Analytics Center of Excellence, and she uses Data Klubben to practice her Danish. He's head of data management and analytics and has witnessed the Danish company grow into a global corporation. They are both passionately driven by the company's purpose to cure diabetes and other serious chronic diseases. Please welcome Tanya Sideri and Thomas B.B. Larsen from Novo Nordisk.
Well, let's get started because we are already in the meeting room at Novo Nordisk. And we are together with you, Tanya, and you, Thomas. So thank you so much for having us at with Data Klubben. Data Klubben.
Yeah,
I think we will just call it Data Klubben because it sounds very weird.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, exactly. So so thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and let's start, Thomas.
Thank you. First and foremost, thank you so much for coming. I think we are also very honored and humbled to receive you here today. We've been monitoring Data Klubben from the side, been following up on your fantastic work. So I also think we are both amazed, happy and humble that you actually want to take the time to come and visit us here in Novo Nordisk. So thank you so much for that. So you can say...
Now, the one thing I want to ask you, you have been here for many years, Thomas.
Yeah.
So how many years and why? That's also a question. It doesn't have to be about digitalization and data, but why stay in Novo Nordisk for so many years?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, and I often actually have these conversations with my wife when I find myself in the hamster wheel.
Yeah.
I need to keep asking myself, why is it that I do what I do, and why is it that I've stayed in Novo Nordisk for 16 years, which is the tenure with the company. I'm in a company where there is a meaningful purpose. We are here to cure chronic diseases, so diseases where there is no cure, where patients, they rely on our treatments. And being in that space is very, very meaningful for me. For personal reasons, I have diabetes close in my family.
Okay.
We treat diabetes with our insulins. And of course, as I said, also because I find it really meaningful to be in a life science company that actually try to improve the lives of our patients.
Yeah.
Second reason is that I've been in several jobs. So I'm working in a company that takes people development super serious. That means that, of course, you can stay in your same job for many, many years, but there's also opportunities to grow and develop, and I've done the same. I have been in 5-6 different positions, 4 or 5 different departments, and that's super exciting.
And before we go down the road about the data platform and stuff like that, let's go to Tanya as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
And happy to see you again. I saw you yesterday, so it's a kind of thing. And you did a very, very good presentation yesterday, so I'm glad you're in the podcast as well.
Thank you.
I think the word Data Klubben is a little weird in English. We have to look into that.
Yeah.
Also, but welcome to the Data Club.
Thank you. And I have to say, actually, I'm understanding Danish. I'm just not, it's not efficient enough to speak. So I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and it also
thank you so much.
Helped me to practice my Danish. So thank you.
Okay, so now it also have another purpose.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
And why are you in Novo Nordisk?
As Thomas mentioned, of course, one is the purpose, right? Because we can see that either directly or indirectly, we impact patients' lives. Second is the impact we have as an area, because we are in a central IT function and we can see the whole company through its data, and we can turbocharge the already kind of advancement of the company with our data platforms and data services. And third, what I find very interesting is it is an international company that is built on the Danish values. So people respect flat hierarchy, really caring about each other. And it's very interesting to see, even though it's become more and more a global pharma, these values have stayed.
So having the ability to stay so close to values, that is amazing. And that is I can feel that is something that you really can feel every day when you go to work. That is very amazing. And can you tell us a little bit about the development of IT and the platform within the time range that you have been part of that development?
Yeah, I can certainly do that. I joined the IT function. We call now ourselves Data, Digital and IT, and I joined that area a little more than 3 years ago. When I joined IT, we didn't have public cloud, and I see that as a clear foundation to be able to work with big data, compute, machine learning and AI. That was enabled a few months later. During that tenure, the CIO asked my function to start building what he called a data backbone. So a place where we can load our data, can cleanse, prepare, interact with data for consumption for different business purposes. So we did that, and we actually moved really fast. This is what one of the things that public cloud can enable, that is from idea to a product, a minimum viable product, you can actually work very fast, lean and agile if you also follow the concept of agile. So we are talking months before we had a monolithic data lake in production. We were talking months before we had it qualified, adhering to our standards, being a qualified environment. We are in a heavily regulated environment in life science industry. We are talking months, then we actually had a couple of thousand users, and yet again months before we are talking about thousands of gigabytes of data sitting in this data backbone.
And did you start the work based on a strategy, or how did you go about it?
Yeah, so the CIO have an overall approach to this. Anders Romare, our company CIO, he is truly driving change in my perspective, and he's also one of the main reasons why I actually wanted to join the IT function, sitting many years on the business side, being part of enterprise implementations, but yet still on the business side. So it's very clear that what the CIO has been driving is introduction of agile principles, introduction of public cloud, enabling a function like mine where we can start to build out data management capabilities and AI and analytical capabilities. And he's driving that through programs that he has enabled, monitor and governs. That also goes for the investments that he's putting into this area.
And Thomas, you're talking a lot about the public cloud. Just for the listener to agnostics at the things about the public cloud, can you go in deeper into that? Because I know a lot of our listeners would like to hear what you have been doing with the platform, especially on the public cloud.
Yeah, so there are we have the last large tech vendors out there. We all know about them, the Googles, the AWS, Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, and whatnot. And what has happened over the past 10, 15 years is they have consolidated data centers. They have enabled what is already available out there on the internet through, in this case, industry-specific services that you as a company can start to lean into. So instead of having your on-prem data center with a fixed capacity and a fixed cost, whether you utilize it or not, you can now basically engage with them and you have access to massive compute, massive storage capabilities, and it is very easy to enable this. And they also take care of a lot of operations on behalf of us as a company. So there's a lot of security things you need to be on top of. Still, you have a clear responsibility as a business unit. You still need to manage the data that you load into the cloud. You need to manage access to data. You need to be considerate about risks and controls so you do it the right way. So it's not only enough to step into the cloud, you also need to use the cloud the right way. But when you do this, and that for us has of course also been a learning journey, to use a classic phrase, but when you do this, you actually see these lean, fast product implementations that actually happening. So the example around the monolithic data lake that we started out with.
And when I listen or when I read your title, there's also some kind of data management.
Yes. And that's the fundament for everything, isn't it? That in a company like Novo Nordisk, we have thousands of systems. those systems, they hold massive amounts of data. We interact with external business partners. Exactly. Getting that data in, getting it into a cloud environment, a safe and secure place to store it, manage access to data so that we actually get it out there and enable the value of the data is the key here.
So even though you operate in a very, also that you said it's a highly regulated area, there are no challenges in going into an open cloud strategy.
There are plenty of challenges, I would say, but the cloud vendors, they have already learned this. So they have taken care of a number of basic controls that they deliver out of the box, including different types of certifications. So they have already, if you want to engage with one of their data centers, which they have globally, you can already look up in their systems what's ISO standards, for instance, does this data center actually live up to? Does it live up to European law such as GDPR? So can you be rest assured that if you put your data here, you are actually living up to the EU legislation? And they have done that on a global scale. But as a company, you need to understand that. Yeah. You need to know how you work with this. You need to have the right people, the right functions to the table. So there's, it's a classic phrase, but there's a huge change management task, even within the IT function, that needs to take place as part of your cloud adoption. But there's nothing to be afraid of in engaging with, working with, and embracing public cloud. I think actually many would argue that it is safer and secure because, as I previously said, they are living up to the highest standards. They have the highest security standards, encryption standards. They take care of patching. So they're doing a lot of IT security operations on behalf of the company. But as a company, you need to understand that. Mm-hmm. You need to have the right capabilities in your organization to then take that technology and work the cloud technology and work with it the right way.
Yeah. And can we then fast forward to today and have a look at your current environment, because I know that you've gone through a huge development over the past 3 years.
We've made a lot of learnings. We've made a lot of mistakes. We've made a lot of learnings in data management and analytics. And I actually think that's one of the most important things to bear in mind, that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
I think to drive a culture where we can fail and we can learn and then move on is key. So starting out with a monolithic data lake, that was a mistake, actually. Yeah. So even though I see it as a huge success, and I really feel it is, it's one of the most important products that we have in the stack in DM&A, it was not the right way to get started, because we put in 2,000 users, or they arrived into the monolithic data lake with different use cases, different needs for data. Some needed small, structured data, for dashboard insights, and others would like to do big machine learning projects. We had one together with production, for instance. They loaded 1 million objects into our data lake, completely blocking everything for everyone. So the other 1,999 users, they were basically left out until these 1 million objects were processed. And that's a learning that you need to have a more segmented approach to how you work with data. You can also not have everyone adhere to when we are in the pharma industry, some of the compliance regulations we need to live up to is translated into the term of GXP. So the X can be replaced with an M for manufacturing, good manufacturing practice. This is owned by the authorities, and it's basically a set of control requirements that we need to live up to. And good manufacturing practice we of course apply in production. But if you have a research project where you're experimenting, you don't need to live up to GMP, as we call it in pharma lingo. Then other control requirements, you still need to be aware of the data and the risk, but you may not need the amount of controls they would apply in that part of the organization. And that drives a complexity that everyone is part of.
I have a question for Tanya, because I'm curious to hear if you also share the same perspective from your point of view.
Completely agree. And of course, as a learning, not only our learnings, but a lot of companies that started with a data lake, right? Because it's having a centralized approach, of course, is good. But on the other hand, then we become the bottleneck. And as Thomas said, it doesn't give the flexibility of the different services, of the different tools that different people need. And for a data science perspective, having a more flexible approach and now going to this data mesh that a lot of other companies are doing as well, that makes total sense, because then we can have custom built accounts and environments based on the controls we need, based on the data storage we need, based on the compute we need.
And before we go down to data mesh, the data mesh broader, the one thing that Thomas said is failing fast is one of the pros. Is that a mindset you can...
I think we can all totally relate into our area, especially everywhere it's important to fail fast, right? But in an industry like ours, that mistakes are very costly, both maybe might even cost patient lives, it's important to fail early and fail fast. And that's why when we started our AI and Analytics Center of Excellence, we committed to started most of our projects with what we call Data to Wisdom Sprint. So basically a hackathon that we group together our data scientists, machine learning engineers with data and domain experts across the company. And within 2 weeks, we create a very quick POC of what is possible. And after these 2 weeks, we ask ourselves, is there any signal in the noise? Are the data good enough? Do we have the technology to scale this? And does this have any business value? And if the answer is yes, then we continue on and then we go to a MVP. Then again, after a couple of months, then we decide go or not go, and then we continue to implementation. But for me, that's very important because then it allows us to fail fast. It helped with the change management in the company because we understood what the business need, the business understood what we can offer. And also, we stress test the data on based what we want to achieve. So even if sometimes that we decided the data is not good enough, then at least we know what we need to fix in order to get there. So we get so much learnings in these 2 weeks, and for me this fail fast approach is very important.
And Thomas, this is another way to work with data and the story about it. Did that work out the first time, or did you have some kind of work around it, or was it easy to see that we need to change, we need to be better at working with data, we need to have the mindset right?
Yeah, now I actually arrived in data management and analytics as employee number 6. So and those that were there when I arrived, they actually still all of them, they are still in the company. One rotated into the data office, which was a really really good good decision as well, and a good step for him. The short answer is it has been super easy, but the long answer is that this is a very very hard agenda, because even though we built DM&A organically, we basically haven't consolidated other departments into DM&A. We haven't acquired any external business partners to try to leapfrog the journey, and I would actually question if that's the right approach or not. So I think building up from the bottom in DM&A, which is what we've literally done, building up a culture, a mindset, a way of working, has taken a lot of time and a lot of work and efforts. But it's a blessing when you are allowed to do that from the bottom, so to speak. But then if you look outside of DM&A, the other 49,950 employees in the company, there's a large organizational change that needs to take place, which I think you probably also have seen before being in the industries.
But how did you grow the organization, and how many are you today?
Today we are 40 in Denmark and 20 in India. We've grown to 60 people in 3 years from around 6 in total, and we've grown organically, meaning that we created two centers of excellence, the Data Management Center of Excellence with cloud engineers and data engineers, and the AI and Analytics COE led by Tonya. And then we also grown the office in India. All of that has happened organically.
And have you acquired people with skills working in the environment you have now, and also with the competencies within data mesh?
And we have some senior people that I think are very, very knowledgeable. They're very skilled. They bring the right mindset, the right culture into DM&A, which we are very, very observant about. But it's new. It's still new technology. We are talking about open source, Linux-based environments, mm-hmm. just as an example. And I remember 20 years ago when I was living in a dorm, studying, working. Those were the nerds in the hall that was playing online role playing yeah. game. I did that as well. And these are the people that today are the tech gurus. But it's a new field. It's a new technology. Honestly, there's not that many people out there.
And Tonya, maybe that's over to you because I know you're talking about DataMesh, and many of our enterprise customers say the same. Can you say some words about that and what's your thoughts and why is DataMesh so up in the air right now?
Exactly, because basically what DataMesh is microservices for data. So what we want to build is this data marketplace where we have data producers and data consumers in the company easily sharing and exchanging data and creating their own kind of data accounts, exactly how it works in Amazon. And as Thomas said, of course, it's a new technology, so we cannot find experts on this. But it's basically, so what we are also hiring is more software engineers that they have experience of building large-scale systems or having experience of microservices. And they're bringing these good DevOps practices, both in the way we do data management, but also in the way we do machine learning. So we approach machine learning and data management from an engineering perspective.
Yeah, so when we started out, I knew from the beginning you can't just put the job ads and people will flow into the department. Then, I mean, we've seen CVs with people who claim to have 20 plus years experience in public cloud.
Okay, that's quite impressive. I'd like to see that CV
that's,
as well.
Exactly, that's quite impressive. So I knew from the beginning, we knew from the beginning that we also needed to build these capabilities from scratch. So when we designed the organization, we of course want people with experience. We don't have that many in the mesh part of the technology. So here the approach for us is to co-create together with our vendors. But we also know that we need skilled people from the universities, which is why we have students. We have a lot of people that we recruit directly from the university. And they become part of a training and onboarding program that we are driving together with our tech vendors, our tech partners. And I think that's important that when you work in a company like Novo Nordisk, which next year turns 100, and we are not born and bred out of tech like Netflix and and Google and Airbnb, we need to recognize we have to partner up. Yeah. That also goes for the organizational education, and we do that. We have an approach, a clear part of our strategy is on how we grow ourselves. And this is not exclusive for our area. We invite the entire company to whom it makes sense to be part of these certifications and training and days where we play with the technology, and we do that together with our tech vendors.
I think from I'm a little bit curious about one thing because I'm very much a human person, so I'm really interested in when people meet technology and what's happening, all of the changes and stuff like that. So looking at, can you take some examples from your business users or business experts perspective when they interact with your marketplace? How does that look and feel from their point of view?
Of course, we are still building the marketplace, right? If any company says they have solved DataMesh, we really need to meet them.
I agree.
I don't think it's going to be...
Please share our contact details.
In station, I think it has to be a working process.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think the way I see the marketplace is how you build network effects. So any Amazon, Facebook are companies based on network effects, how to create different... double side network effects, consumers and producers together. And similarly, this is a data marketplace where we have to have the same concept. So where do we start? What are the first nodes we bring on the marketplace? And it's usually easier first to focus on more on the engineering. So the first customers of the marketplace are data engineers distributed across different sides of business. And then you start, okay, in which side of business should we start? And we already have examples that we are building this marketplace, both in product supply, both in our sales regions. And then you consider, okay, now I have some data in the marketplace from different parts of the business. How do I connect them? And then you have to think what services you build. So this is the journey we are. And now our data marketplace focusing more on the builders, on the engineers. And slowly, while we grow, we are considering how much we can make it more accessible for everybody in the company to try to search, like exactly how you search in Amazon, to see what data are in this marketplace.
Do you have data engineers decentralized across the whole organization?
Not the whole organization.
Okay.
There are parts of the business that do not have data engineers or haven't yet seen the need for data engineers.
I have also one question. When we talk about the public cloud, and you said a lot of resume and many years for that, and when you're working with the agnostics cloud, what is the structure about it? Because it's just not Asia or Cluden. What do you do there?
Yeah, and it's a complicated topic, and I would even claim that I don't think we've solved it perfect entirely yet either. I would actually maybe like to point back on your question or comment, Rosa, about being a human being and how you interact with data and how you work with data. In my mind, I try to kind of segregate between the horizontal agenda where you drive data across the value chain. This often happens in planning functions, financial analysis, forecasting, reporting, supply chain planning, production planning, and these kinds of things. But of course, in a company like Novo Nordisk, which is a life science company, you have a patient-centric approach to your data. You have early research that are trying to invent new technologies, what we call research technology, that you take into clinical trial where we are testing the drug on the patient. And when we go into the last stage, we are talking about thousands of patients. And from a drug has been patented, a research technology, until we are ready to launch it to the market, it typically takes about 10 years or so. That gives us another 10 years to sell the drug. But here you can say the data is also flowing horizontally. But when it comes to data and interacting with data, that's back to this point. There's something around data democratization, augmenting data, making data available for the masses, as I call it. And there's a difference between a business analyst or a data analyst working maybe in a business support function versus a scientist or a data scientist that is trying to create a new protein, which was one of the examples we saw on the AI day that Tonya hosted internally the other day. So the point is, and this is what I call the vertical agenda, where you go deep, where it's big data, where it's everything as code. And it's completely different tools. It's completely different types of data. It's completely different cloud infrastructure that you need compute power, just to make a couple of examples, compared to if you want to build a management KPI that is shared with 10,000 consumers. It's way different.
Data science and structuring and machine learning, that's not normal, the words you have together when we are together with a data science. They make something in Python, hopefully it's on a computer or somewhere.
Exactly. And to be fair, that's fine. That's fine in the beginning. And that's how we work. I mean, naturally, when you want to, first you have to focus on the value, not on the how you do it. And that's what we do on the hackathon. And there, of course, I'm sure a lot of the data scientists will be ashamed to show their code anywhere else, because we hack it all the way through. But then at some point, you have to balance your speed of innovation versus the technical depth you will have down the road.
Yeah.
And so after the 2 weeks on the hackathon, then if we continue to the next step, then we focus on all the good machine learning practices. And that is, of course, tooling, what is the standard tooling we should use, to practices like code versioning and review practices, coding standards and frameworks, and cookie cutters we should use for how to structure our machine learning models. And now also we have an area that is in our team that focuses explicitly on creating MLOps services. So let's say you have a product in the data mesh or in the data marketplace, and you have a machine learning algorithm. We need to make it easy for every data scientist across the company to wrap it with an API, to version it, and auto-provision the infrastructure and have the pipeline template.
And that is not easy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if we, and now that's what we are creating. We're creating microservices across the whole machine learning model lifecycle so people can use them as Lego bricks and create their models. So then a data scientist in the company doesn't have to be a cloud developer, a security specialist, qualification specialist, and data engineer to get the models into production.
And the skill set about that, Thomas, what's your opinion?
But I actually think the skill set, Tonya already listed up, what are the types of people and the types of capabilities that you need. But I think the complexity on top of that being in life science industry is then we need to qualify it as well. We do that embedded in the way that we work. Essentially understand the risk, understand the data, understand the business problem, and in the context you want to take the ML algorithm or the solution into production. And then to the DevOps principles, when you build it, you own it. You need to keep people in the product team that still teams up with the business. The business are the product owners that prioritizes. If we don't do this, we won't be able to drive significant value creation in bringing our data to life. And that is what we really want. So either by generating new revenue streams or being part of cost optimizations or accelerating research, which is the example I spoke about earlier on in this conversation.
I know that with the whole vision of bringing data to life, you really want this to be a demand that is coming from the business. So how do you inspire the business to be creative and be part of hackalongs or hackathons and stuff like that?
I think people, first of all, they want to be creative, right? They sometimes do not know how, like what mediums do they have. Yeah. So once is about, of course, having some tangible products to speak about. And now within 1.5 years, because also we focus so much in the technology to have it ready the last couple of years, we already have products across the organization, all the way from using machine learning into visual inspection, to knowledge graphs to find new molecules in an R&D, to marketing mix modeling and sales at least modeling commercial. So once we have these products, we have to show them across the company so other people understand what's possible. Then the hackathons also help a lot because then we demo what we are making so people see also what's possible. And last but not least, every advanced technology needs also a lot of communication, right? So we have to constantly communicate what we're doing to show to our colleagues what is possible. And that's why we have a whole day in Novo Nordisk dedicated to AI where we have colleagues all across the company showing demos of how they use machine learning in the work, all the way from R&D to clinical trials to commercial. And that was an eye-opening because there were more than 600 people across the world joining that day, all of us united in the same curiosity. And that's why I think sometimes we have to stop fetishizing this technology and making it difficult. The only way people understand this technology is to see examples.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're focusing on.
Especially in your area.
Yeah, and then you also in that day included a Danish AI artist. There were talks on AI ethics. So I think also provoking and having a day where we end up with a little fruit for thought afterwards is also, I think, very important to bring to the table here.
So in your Center of Excellence, are you then ready now for what's coming from the business based on all of the inspiration they've got?
Say yes.
Fingers crossed. But we have good principles and good technology, and we also have very competent people all across the business. So I really feel we are ready to take AI to the next step.
No, now you are going to test all of your ops and
exactly.
They just have 600 people to do the AI strategy for the next coming year. So that's perfect.
Exactly.
Thomas, you have talked about it before. I can remember it was off mic. But the different mindsets in the departments around, because this is a pharma company still.
Yes.
Can we take that?
I think this is going to take time. Honestly, I mean, I have been part of other large-scale implementations, and it took 5 to 10 years before the organization truly turned around. Some people left, new people came in, other people were part of the change.
Yeah.
this is what we're looking at. I think it's the same with AI.
Can you see different departments who's doing better or do understand what the marketplace and the product is?
Surely.
Yeah.
Of course, there's variation in the approach to this across Novo Nordisk. And in some departments, it really doesn't matter. I think that's also important to bear in mind that if we, for instance, we have an example where we are enabling streaming analytics together with manufacturing IT and production. And essentially what it does is it's some data points that has been created on the production equipment. And that data is being streamed to a dashboard that the operators get, and then they just make better decisions that optimize the throughput on the equipment.
Yeah, and that's enough.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. And then you have a team of lean experts, data engineers, that are actually doing the stuff behind the scene. And what we do in IT is we enable this. So that's an example of where you don't need to have everyone on board. It's not needed.
Tonya, I know that you've been through some other big companies, and maybe you can't relate to this, but we often meet a lot of organizations that have trouble working with data science and AI, and that also are lacking actually putting these use cases into production. So every time I meet someone like you, I'm always curious why these things can be so difficult.
For me, there's two principles always, and that you have to follow. And of course, I come from a tech background, so there's also like functions. One, you have to minimize your distance to the business, and that's why we have people working across the company. Because sometimes the reason they do not put no production is because we are focusing on the wrong thing in the first place. So by working very close to the business and have the domain experts of what actually is useful, that helps. And then second, you have to maximize your technical speed. And a lot of the companies think that by hiring data scientists, they magically will fix everything and all the data, right? But that's why I think we're in a better point, because we started realistically that first we need the basic principles. We need the technology. We need the storage. We need the cloud. We need to bring data there. And then once we reach a certain maturity, we started working on this data.
I have also one question there, because I know there's a different thought about POCs, POVs and stuff about algorithms and data science. What's your opinion about, you said failing fast, so maybe I know the answer, but can you get into the POC and the POV talks? Is that a good idea, or what do you think as a data science to get there fast?
It's necessary. Yeah. How can you prove, you need to prove the value. So you might work in algorithms for years and then people will still don't understand what to use it for. And that's why it's very important in the hackathon to have a very quick whole end-to-end flow, all the way to have a small data engineering, to have a machine learning, and then have an endpoint where you showcase it in a dashboard or in any other way people want to use it for. So then already within 2 weeks, people can interact and then give feedback back to the data, back to the machine learning moment, what they need to get fixed.
But the things you're saying there is very difficult for other companies. So I'm glad you're saying, yeah, Thomas.
But I can share just a few details.
Yeah.
I think we have about 5 engineers to 1 data scientist.
Yes. That's okay.
So that's
point.
The ratio we are working with here. And then it's again about product-centric approach. And as IT function, you need a response to what we talk about, the graveyard of POCs, which I guess links together with bring data to life, right?
Yeah.
that you need to have an idea or a solution for how will you take this to production so you adhere to business requirements, legal regulation and whatnot. Which is one of the reasons why we also invested in a machine MLOps platform that also is in the area of our AI COE.
Exactly. And to add with this, because I've worked in many companies, what I'm always surprised is in any digital product, including machine learning, people think that after it goes live, it will just live by its own.
Yeah.
And then think about operations and implementation early on, even in the POC phase. That's so important.
Say it again. Please say it again.
Exactly.
And to add on this, also many mistakes we've made in DM&A the past couple of years are projects that we've been part of, use cases where the business are throwing the algorithms over the fence.
Mm. Yeah.
We try to catch it and we fail every time. Every time we are way too optimistic on timelines and everything. And we don't get the value out of it as we could have done if we worked closely together from the beginning.
something that, because I think that what Heino tried to do earlier is to say that we have a few minutes left, and we're actually going to wrap up very, very soon.
It's going fast, but yeah, we have to.
Exactly. It's been a great conversation. What we are often focusing on when we end these episodes is, of course, your next level, because there's been a lot of things happening for the past very few years. And can you tell us a little bit about what will happen in the future? What is your next big thing?
Please push the button before.
So. Yeah, but it's in Danish.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Men det kan godt blive lidt vildere.
Do you understand?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think honestly, honestly, we're not gonna beat that. Trying to overimpress anyone with what's the next big thing. We have enough on our hands. We have technology. We have data. So our task is to get this out in the organization. If we are to drive significant impact in the company, we still have a lot of work to do. We track the value that we create. We track the monetary value that we create. So just by getting the data mesh out, by getting the ML ops out, that is going to be crazy.
I agree. And Anton, you can end this, but because one of the ground disciplines right now is data mesh and the structure under or the cycle under. So I think that's the next level.
Exactly. And this is what we cannot promise as the next step, but this is what we are excited about. When you actually have data products all across the company and create these data network effects, so all the way from one side to the company, they can easily share and utilize data from another side of the company, and then enable everybody to find, work, and easily build machine learning models with this data. And then we can truly bring those data to life. Mm.
Well, I think that's a perfect ending.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of your wisdom today in the episode. And also thank you for sharing these thoughts and your work with other companies in Denmark. Because I think that the journey and the next level that you are already in, that is great that you also want to be transparent about it and help others in the same situation. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being here, Thomas and Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Dataklubben is brought to you by Inspire, the leading data consultancy in Denmark. Thank you for listening.